species. Tell the species of a bird. So
while visiting, I'm going to be lecturing from this first canto, oddly enough. And the sequence of verses that I'm in right now is chapter 2, texts 28 and 29 and 30. The verse 28 and 29 together, Vasudeva, Paraveda Vasudeva, Paramataha Vasudeva, Parayoga Vasudeva, Parakriyaha. It is not yet clear. Vasudeva param jnanam, Vasudeva paro param tapaha, Vasudeva paro dharmo, Vasudeva paragati. That's the climax of this section. The section is describing the object of devotion, exclusive devotion. So, Rupa Goswami teaches that devotion is exclusive, or love is exclusive. A common example is a woman married to her husband. She doesn't think, oh, so many men are so nice. That's unchanged. She may appreciate different people have nice qualities, but she's very faithful to her husband. Similarly, in devotion, it's exclusive. But the good news is, because when one selects the object as the fountainhead of all existence, it's all inclusive. That is to say, by putting water on the root of the tree, all the leaves and branches, by putting food in the stomach, all the limbs of the body are nourished. Similarly, by the exclusive devotion to the personality of Godhead, one develops great respect for all living entities. Prabhupada discusses this in Ishvapanishad, the universal brotherhood idea. It's a platitude, it's a manner of speech only that has no substance for most people that speak like that. Philanthropists think like that, like to speak like that, and impersonalists like to think like that, at least those that have come off the mountain now in the world. Prabhupada's teaching is without. That's without and with. Without connection with the fountainhead of all existence, it's meaningless talk. Absolutely meaningless talk. It's talk only, with no substance. Because how is there universal anything without recognizing the Vedantic approach is what's the source of everything? You can't say everything is the source of everything. That's gobbledygook. Everything is the source of everything. And everything is everything. Universal brotherhood. Oh, that was so high I couldn't understand it. It must be true. Vasudeva is the source of everything. Matak paratram nanya kinche dasti dananjaya. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. Janma divasya yataha. There is a source of everything. So bhakti is reposing our service propensity, which is our constitutional propensity, not on some material object, or object of worship, or object of service. But I'm supreme, fountain head of everything, but it's exclusive. So, just like the verse, going back earlier in this chapter, Tasmat Ekena Manasa Bhagavan Satvatam Patihi. What's the rest? Shrotavya Kirtitavyascha Yeya Pujascha Nityada. This is expanding on that verse. The devotion is exclusive. Ekena Manasa. Or just what's the verse of Bhagavad Gita? 241 Bhagavad Gita. Huh? Yavasayatmika Bodhi Ekeha Kurunandana. It's singular. It's exclusive. Because it is all inclusive. Same time. And it's the only all-inclusive something. And the others are silly, misleading. So, after making that declaration, Sutta Goswami describes the process of bhakti, because process of bhakti, how do you establish a relationship with that Supreme? That's what bhakti is. Abhideya again. What do you do? This is how to. And then the result, prayojana, what happens when you do the how to properly? Modes of nature subside. Focus upon the personality of Godhead is accomplished. So the next cluster verses is where this is the culmination. Let us be very clear about what the object of devotion is and what the object of devotion isn't. Then it's really clear. Not somewhere out there in that direction. It's really clear. This is what that object of devotion is. It's a complete definition. So, you know these verses, this is just a summary, but the modes of nature are compared. Ignorance, passion, goodness, and vast is goodness. Wood is better than raw earth. Fire is better than wood, and smoke is better than wood, and fire is better than smoke. Because with fire, then you can perform yajna. When you can perform yajna, you can approach the Supreme. Through the attaining the quality of goodness, one can approach transcendental knowledge. And that's the goal. So goodness is best. And so that form of worship, which brings one to goodness, is best. Worship of Vishnu. And Prabhupada explains elaborately that while the devotee is respectful to all living entities, mumukshavo gora rupa hitva bhuta Patin Ataha Hitva, they reject the Kora Rupa, ghastly and terrible forms of the demigods. That's not nice language. Ghastly and horrible forms. But some of the forms are ghastly and horrible. Some of them aren't so ghastly and so horrible, but the main idea is, well, there's two main ideas. What's the purpose served in the function of worshiping the temporary created personalities of this world. What it is accumulation of some temporary asset. What it isn't is liberation. And the Bhagavatam here has already declared, dharmasya hi apavargasya. Dharma is only to be performed for ultimate liberation, nartotayopakalpate, never for material gain. That kind of puts some closure on things. The demigods are not liberated and cannot deliver liberation. They can deliver material assets. They cannot deliver liberation. So it takes care of it. They're not worshipped. They're not disrespected. Prabhupada translates, those who are serious about liberation are certainly non-envious. It's not, we won't have anything to do with the demigods because we're envious of them. That's not the reason. And they respect all, so it's not out of disrespect. But it's recognizing. So while you may respect, you don't render devotional service unto. So even if we're, let's say, dealing respectfully with the cab driver, we're not worshiping the cab driver, we're not seeing the cab. We're respecting the government official, the simple man, whatever position, social position. The demigod, we're respecting. We're not worshiping them. They have a function. They have a service to do. That's very nice. And we take benefit of their service. The taxi driver brought us here. It's nice. He didn't make any wrong turns. He got us right here. No accident. Thank you very much. Nice service. Here's our payment. And the demigod worship is similar. We're receiving, Prabhupada explains. If you didn't pay your electric bill, we wouldn't have the fan, we wouldn't have the lights, we wouldn't have the facility. So we pay the electric company. But we're receiving the light of the sun. We wouldn't be able to live without the light of the sun. We would expire without the light of the sun. If it was too much or too little, we freeze or burst in flames. We couldn't live when it was without properly regulated. Where's the payment? Demigod worship is making payment. Water. You can't live without water. And so forth. So, who is supplying these things? There's a government agency regulating, but where are they deriving the resources and even the ability to do what they're doing? From some higher. Demigod worship is making that. So there's respecting, but it's not that respecting is not the same as rendering service unto, taking ultimate shelter in. The Bhagavatam wants us to understand in devotional service what is the object and what isn't the object of devotional service. So, now this verse. So to be very clear at why it's repeated several times in the purports, why is this exclusive thing? Well, one of the whys is the mandate of scripture is we should perform karma for ultimate liberation. The demigods cannot do that, so we worship Vishnu who can deliver ultimate liberation. And ultimate liberation doesn't just mean, as Prabhupada says, the paltry knowledge that I'm spirit, not matter. Aham Brahmasmi. That's nice. But in that existence as spirit, what do? The ultimate liberation is the fully healthy activities of the liberated soul. That's ultimate liberation. All dharma is meant for that. And worship of Vishnu brings us to that position. It doesn't matter what your mode of nature is. I mean, one should strive to become at least in the quality of goodness. But even if one isn't in the quality of goodness, by worship of Vishnu, one can come to the quality of goodness and then enter a transcendence. And you can't say the same thing about the worship of the demigods. Although some people try to say, whatever you want, yatamatatupa, whatever you want to worship is okay. It's not that all paths lead to Rome. Whatever path you follow, it takes you to the same place. It's not what the Bhagavad Gita says. Yanti deva vrta devan pitrin yanti pitri vrta bhutani yanti bhutejya. There's different destinations. Or to the type of worship that one takes up. So Vishnu worship is what's, that's the conclusion leading to this. And now here's, the gavel hits the desk. This is the conclusion. So, Prabhupada goes through one by one these eight phrases, starting with Vasudeva Para Veda. What's the purpose of the Vedas? Bhagavad Gita tells us to know Krishna. So Vasudeva Para Veda. Vasudeva is the purpose of the Vedas. But he takes another approach also. He says, he doesn't use the Sanskrit, but he's going through Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. So according to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all of the Vedas, so that's all the Vedas, Vedanta Sutra, Bhagavatam, take any slice of the Vedas or the whole Vedas. And its division of knowledge is in these three categories. Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. So he uses the language Abhideya as establishing one's relationship. Establishing. But more accurate, he then corrects, is reviving our relationship. But in our condition, it's establishing. Because we were so covered. And so that's Abhideya. Before that is what he's doing here, which is, what is the Supreme and what are the demigods in relation to the Supreme? What is everything in relation to the Supreme? That's Sambandha. What's the relationship? And then acting or establishing that relationship, acting with the activities, that's devotional service. The essence of Dharma is devotional service, and the fruit of Dharma is to know Krishna. So how do you know Krishna? Through the medium of service. Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvata. You know Krishna through the medium of service and not otherwise. So this is amplifying and then concluding and putting a nice bow and ribbon on the topic of devotion is exclusive and unto whom? Vasudeva Para Veda. The Vedas deal with these three subjects. Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. Worshipping. The rendering devotional service to Vasudeva. That's the conclusion. The essence of all the Vedas. Like the question of the sages. What's the essence of all the knowledge of all the Vedas? In one short phrase. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha. this is amplifying that. Vasudeva, saint. Raveda. Rendering devotional service unto the personality of God. Vasudeva. Ultimately reviving our lust loving relation, our lust loving service unto Him. No demigod can award freedom from material bondage. That was stated before. Then he wraps up this section by taking a little detour over here with the impersonalists. And the impersonalists, not understanding Krishna's actual position as the source of everything, the absolute truth. The absolute truth means, omnipotent. Potencies come from the potent. The source is potent. The potencies come from the potent. The supreme is omnipotent. Not knowing the omnipotency of the supreme, Prabhupada writes, they put him on equal footing with all other living beings. Anyone is okay. Because after all, it doesn't matter to anyone. It's the unborn, unmanifest within. So this one, that one, take your pick, whatever you like. Minimizing the omnipotency of the personality of Godhead, they place the personality of God at an equal footing with other living entities. And then people become accustomed to that, and then they become uncomfortable when you make distinction about the personality of Godhead. I'm sure you've encountered that in the course of your preaching work. I have. Some people are very troubled. Some people get over that trouble. Some people don't. And for this act, such impersonalists get freedom from material bondage only with great difficulty. Wait a minute, I thought you can't get freedom from material existence except the worship of Vasudeva. So what is there some other means of getting freed from material existence without worship of Vasudeva? And there's two answers. One is Bhuvanam Jananam Ante Ganavan Makrabhadite. That's a maybe. They may surrender unto Krishna after many births and deaths. Understanding Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Vasudeva is everything. Then they surrender unto Him. But if not, then they don't get ultimate liberation, they get the Sayujya Mukti, which isn't ultimate liberation. It's very artificial. Suspend your individuality. Prabhupada gives a metaphor, and one sannyasa I know gives another metaphor. Prabhupada's metaphor is somebody in solitary confinement. They put them in a straitjacket, put a gag in their mouth, blindfold their eyes in a padded cell. Liberated. That's not liberated. That's ultimate incarceration. But all individuality is suppressed. And it doesn't endure because the living entity wants activity. We're naturally active. We want loving relationships. We're naturally social beings. So it's an artificial position, this Sayujya Mukti. It's not enduring. Aruya Krishna Param Padam Patapatantya Dodad Madhavishma Dhamri. The other explanation isn't a Prabhupada explanation, but it's kind of funny. It's Sri Dhyananda Maharaj. He said it's like in a football game, where you don't know football, you know cricket and soccer, but they're trying to reach the goal line to get right down to the final yard and have to cross the goal line. So they give the ball to the fullback. And those, all these big guys, just like jammed up bodies, you can't even distinguish who's who and what's what. It's just like compressed light, and there's some legs wiggling and some arms wiggling, but that's about it. Individuality is suspended. You can't tell who's who and what's what. So the Brahmajyoti is packed up living entities whose individuality has been suspended. And that happiness is the cessation of material distress. The positive happiness of the soul in the soul's natural healthy activities isn't being manifested. Therefore, dharma shahi apavarga shahi, ultimate liberation.
In Prabhupada's really beautiful language, it's regaining previous purport, regaining the life of freedom in the transcendental world, where the personality of Godhead is the supreme person. That's ultimate liberation. So, Vasudeva Praveda. Then, Vasudeva Pramakaha. Anybody know what this word makaha means?
It's a very specific term. You could say yajna or agnihotra. They're also terms for fire sacrifice. Makaha is specific. It's karmakanda yajnas. It has a specific application. It can be used in a more general way, but that's its more technical meaning. Fire sacrifices connected with karmakanda rituals. Vasudeva Paramakaha. That's like Krishna's statement in the last chapter of the fifth, excuse me, last verse of the fifth chapter. Lokaram Jagatapasana. Even in the karmakanda rituals, when the very first mantra is invoking the bhokta of the yajna. And guess who it is? Krishna, Vasudeva, Narayana. Sometimes even the mantra is literally Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And then they go through all the other ones. But he's the bhokta of the yajna.
When they argue, and some people do argue, that the Vedic activities are based on sacrificial ceremonies.
This is true. But all such sacrifices are also meant for realizing the truth about Vasudeva. So, in 1969, in 70, Prabhupada met one Professor Stahl, S-T-A-H-L, and Professor Stahl had received a copy of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, as it is, and he wrote to Prabhupada taking exception with how he had translated things. And he was one of these persons who argues that the Vedic activities are based on sacrificial ceremonies. He was saying, you're saying devotional service. But yajna. The Vedas are filled, which is true, with indications of yajna. So Prabhupada's, he published the correspondence because he wanted us to understand, you know, the back and forth, because we're going to meet these people sometimes. But how do you address their concerns? And so, in brief, Prabhupada's reply was, fine, yajna, but yajna unto whom? When you say sacrifice, sacrifice unto whom? And Professor Stahl's answer was, not unto whom. Sacrifice. He's an impersonalist. Just the act of sacrifice, the act of the fire yajna itself. Just do that. That's the essence. To Prabhupada, one reply was, unto whom? And the other is what he's saying here. The purpose of that sacrifice is what? You know, Vasudeva. And therefore, to know Vasudeva is through the medium of devotional service. Yajna indicates the principle of sacrifice unto the Supreme. And devotional service means acting in all respects unto the Supreme as a unto the Supreme, whatever you do. Not only the yajna, the fire, but whatever you do, the fire of sacrifice unto the Supreme. Professor Stahl didn't agree. The Prabhupada concluded the discussion. So, you know, let the reader of this correspondence make their own decision. Like what Krishna said to Arjuna, now that you've heard everything, do what you feel you must do. So there are arguments on the other side, and it's good for us to know what those arguments, it'll help make our minds strong, but we should know what the answer is to those other arguments. Another name of Vasudeva is yajna, which means sacrifice. And in the Bhagavad Gita it's clearly stated that all sacrifices and all activities are to be conducted for the satisfaction of yajna or Vishnu. But that's that one. Then the third, Vasudeva Pra Yoga. So Prabhupada writes, this is the case also with the yoga system. Yoga means to get in touch with the Supreme Lord. Then probably Ashtanga, Asana, Dhyana, Dharana, Samadhi, Pranayama. What are they meant for? They're meant for concentrating the mind upon the localized feature of the Supreme, Paramatma. And you're right, Paramatma realization is but partial realization of Vasudeva. He doesn't clarify this, but he says, and if one is successful in that attempt, one revives Vasudeva in full. No explanation. Paramatma is partial realization. But it's something like, read very carefully, the teachings of Lord Kapila Dev, because the process of the Yuga Dharma in Satya Yuga is what? Meditation. Okay, so now you're doing meditation upon Paramatma. How does it, because Kapila is the personality of Godhead, he's not going to speak about stop at Paramatma realization. He's going to be speaking about devotional service. So it starts with Sankhya, Kapila's Sankhya philosophy, right? This is matter, and over here is spirit. There is matter, here is spirit. Now that you're clear what is the realm of spirit, fix in the process of meditation upon spirit, the Supreme Spirit, in that realized state, with spiritualized senses engaged in service to the Supreme, that one can realize Vasudeva in full. Beyond Paramatma realization is through the medium of devotional service, one can realize the personality of God in full. Just like the example in the Nectar of Devotion. The Brahmin throughout his life was worshipping his deity, and when he became very old, he couldn't go and get all the ingredients, and so he did it within his mind. You know the story, right? How does the story end up? He burned his thumb. He was meditating and making nice sweet rice, and he wanted to test it, if it come out, how it come out, and put his thumb in. Whoa! And his meditation broke, and his thumb was burned. Although it was in a meditation state. So it's not like we should just meditate on chanting our rounds. Cooking the offering for the deity. Make a very nice offering. It was allowable in his case because his body wouldn't cooperate. It was so old it couldn't function, but he could continue in the mood of devotional service to such a degree of absorption that was actually taking place on some plane. I would say within the mind, or say of the soul. But the absorption was so complete that even the external manifestation matched that subtler form of service. Anyway, Vasudeva Para Yoga. Vasudeva Para Kriyaha. What does Kriyaha mean? Kriya? Productive activities. Work. Activity. But those are general definitions of the term or meanings of the term. More specifically, it has to do with productive activities. The Prabhupada doesn't delineate that in the purport. But when one engages in prescribed duties, that's for elevation to the quality of goodness. I mean, the spiritual fruit is elevation to the quality of goodness. And then, from the quality of goodness, worshipping the Supreme, realizing the Supreme. If followed to its completion, this fruitive activity, prescribed duty program of the Vedas leads one to Vasudeva. Parakriyaha. We have four more remaining. Vasudeva Param Jnanam. This is also so for the culture of knowledge. In the Bhagavad Gita, there are 18 items in culturing knowledge. Where's that? Chapter 13, text 8 through 12. 18 items in the culture of knowledge. By the culture of knowledge, one gradually becomes prideless, devoid of vanity, non-violent, forbearing, simple, devoted to the great spiritual master and self-control, etc. By the culture of knowledge, one becomes unattached, the quality of vairagya, from seeing shelter in temporary things. Even things that are very near and dear to us, like this body and the relations of this body, one's immediate family members and extended family members, and those are very near and dear to us. But through the medium of devotional service, one doesn't find disgust in them, one doesn't become negligent in them, but one doesn't see them as shelter and our identity and who we are. And all culture of knowledge culminates in devotional service to the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. Vasudeva from Jnanam. So he just moved us from knowledge into devotional service.
Because knowledge leads to detachment, and real knowledge leads to attachment to the Supreme. And when one grows in attachment to the Supreme, devotional service to the Supreme. Fruit of knowledge is devotional service to the Supreme. Abhunam jamana mante yadavam nam mante. The fruit of all knowledge, but the purpose of the Vedas, the purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna. So same kind of thought process. Then he goes the other direction. What about knowledge that's devoid of understanding the connection of things with Vasudeva? He calls it physical knowledge, Ajnana, or in the Ishopanishad it's Avidya. What's the Andham Tamaha Pravishan? Physical knowledge in its various branches is condemned in the Bhagavad Gita as ajnana, or the opposite of real knowledge. The ultimate aim of physical knowledge is what? Sense gratification. Come on. What's all the technology research that's going on at the universities for? It's to make some kind of project or product or gadget or some kind of commercial something so people can go out and enjoy. When it's devoid of that consciousness, the ultimate objective is sense gratification. Do it more sophisticated, but sense gratification. Don't do it sophisticated, but sense gratification. Sophisticated sense gratification is considered advancement of... Like Prabhupada said, that if your technology is... He would sometimes praise it. You can do so many things. Zoom, zoom in your automobiles. Nice highways, skyscraper buildings, satellites. So many sophistications. This is a great accomplishment. Sometimes give that credit. But what is it? It's just taking one piece of matter and putting it together with another piece of matter. And how is that leading to an elevation of consciousness, elevation of quality of the individual, quality of life? It's polished, but it's the same animal life. So you're polished animals. You get credit. You're polished animals. But human life goes beyond that. So human life doesn't mean trash the other stuff. It means put personality of Godhead very squarely and clearly and prominently in the center. So prolonging the miserable life of material existence is nescience. But the same physical knowledge leading to the way of spiritual understanding helps one to end the miserable life of physical existence and to begin the life of spiritual existence on the plane of Vasudeva. That's five down, three to go. Vasudeva para tapaha. Tapa means voluntarily accepting bodily pains to achieve some higher end of life. So the materialists, everyday materialists and the big time materialists, Ravana Hanaraji Kashipu, they want severe austerities to get the thing they wanted, this higher thing they wanted. It's not an unknown principle to materialists, and it's not an unknown principle to spiritualists. But the principle for the spiritualist is
like, you know, whatever austerities we perform on appearance days of the Lord or Ekadasis or something. What purpose? That's why I can get more powerful or get more money or something. Get a good grade in my exam. I got a big exam. I'm going to do Ekadasi very nicely. I'm going to get a good grade in my exam. Not for those purposes. For the purpose of detaching ourselves from material existence and pleasing the Supreme Lord by increasing our hearing and chanting in a purer state of consciousness.
So,
Vasudeva Paratapa. The more Vasudeva Paro Dharma. So this is how it goes right into Paradharma. What's Paradharma? What's the first expression of that in the first canto of Bhagavatam? Paradharma. Dharma Prodita Kaitavo Tra. Paramo Nirmatsaram Satam. Paradharma is absent the Kaitava Dharma. Mode of goodness is absent. Transcendental goodness is totally absent. Ignorance and passion. So Paradharma is no one should bother himself with intuitive activities and dry speculation about transcendental knowledge. Srupa Goswami. Anyabhilasha to Shunyam. Jnana Karma Dhanavata. What should one do instead? Everyone should at once engage himself in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. What shouldn't you do? No one should worship different demigods who work as different hands of the Lord for creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world. Because they're helping the Lord, we respect. They're doing some nice service, but they're not the Lord. We respect them. Object of our worship. Therefore, the final Vasudeva Para Gatihi. Gatihi, goal. It's the ultimate goal of life. Concluding sentences. Lord Vishnu or Vasudeva is always transcendentally situated, even though he accepts the quality of goodness of the material world. He is still transcendental to all material modes. Would somebody like to explain that? Prabhupada explains it. When we hear that Vishnu is in charge of the mode of goodness, as Brahma is in charge of creation, the mode of passion, the mode of Shiva in charge of destruction, the mode of ignorance, does this mean that Vishnu is contaminated by the mode of goodness? We speak like that about Brahma, there's some passion. We speak like that about Lord Shiva, there's direct contact with material nature. It brings about destruction. The example Prabhupada gives, standard one, the governor that goes into the prison, or the prison warden. He's in the prison. But he's free to move about the prison. In fact, he can grant pardon to any prisoner. Amnesty, the governor says, you're free. Just like that, he's free. So, although Vishnu is in charge of the mode of goodness, he's not influenced by the tamasic, rajasic content or taint of the mode of goodness. He's in charge of the mode of goodness. And therefore those who worship Lord Vishnu approaching the quality of goodness, they actually get transcendence. Because he's the object. He's all before, he's beyond the modes of nature. very short. It's text 30 is a bridge into the next section. Text 30 is in the beginning of the material creation, the absolute personality of Godhead, Vasudev, in his transcendental position, created the energies of cause and effect by his own internal potency. It's his internal potency. He's not directly in touch with material creation, but by his internal potency, he creates the principles of cause and effect. And then everybody else runs around and does stuff, which he sets up. They have their capacity to do. And if he doesn't set up their capacity to do, they can't do. They can run around, but they can't do. They can't accomplish. Purposes, the overall or the even limited purposes of creation, maintenance, and destruction. Everything is resting upon the absolute truth. That's the statement. Okay, so holding your back from your very important work, going to the office, doing something. So any comments or questions?
The six questions that the sages had asked.
Yeah.
And then there was one question that, what is the purpose of the Lord appearing as the Son of Vasudeva? Which one of these verses actually answers that?
How about this? I'll provide you for this evening the six questions and six answers according to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Which are the six questions? Right straight from this commentary. And which verses address the six answers? And the wind and the everything, water.
We should respect it. It is our duty. We should respect it. It doesn't mean that we should appreciate it.
Sure.
But we are not doing it. So, personally, why is the movement doing it?
Why, as devotees, we're not making some ritual to worship the sun? You know the answer to that. The worship in Krishna, that's already accomplished. Devarshi Bhutavra Patrin Ninam Prabhupada quoted that verse. From the time, so again and again, from the time of birth, we're debtors. And he lists the principal indebtor, you know, those whom we're indebted to, those that are supplying us things, and our parents and the forefathers and the great sages and so on and so on. And most people are neglecting to do that, so to be, Prabhupada uses the word insolvent or bankrupt. Lawbreakers, put them in jail. They didn't pay their debts, debtor prison. All in the material world. But by worshipping the personality of Godhead, all of that is accomplished. Doesn't matter what he does. Couldn't do that. So the bountiful and the regulated nature becomes, you know, the improvements in all of those conditions. Like when Krishna was present, everything was in abundance. Because Mother Earth was feeling Krishna's soft feet on her body. She was in bliss. She supplied everything but profusely. So it's both. Descends in his spiritual atmosphere. His whole dham comes with him. Wherever he is, that spiritual atmosphere is. Say it again slower. It doesn't mean that. It means everything he does is by his internal potency. That's what it means. He can interact. He interacted with the washerman. He interacted with Shishupal. It's just like that. Here's a nice example. For the purpose of creation, Mahavishnu, he glances. And that glance is impregnation. There's no direct contact. Speak too fast, I can't follow what you're saying. Shirdakshay Vishnu, he's in the heart. So supposing somebody has a heart transplant, if there was material contact, Paramatma would be gone. There's not immaterial contact. He's transcendentally situated within the heart by his own internal potency. I think you're trying to understand with your speculative brain. I think that's the problem. Yes.
With respect to the personal
impersonal. Liberation.
Which is generally called as a speculation condition. So, that's the description of speculation. So, my question is, is that a result of emotional sentiment, or what is the degree of truth that is associated with that?
What's the degree? degree of truth in
the assertion that personal division is actually a mental condition.
And which condition?
Stereo's condition.
That what is the degree of truth of the assertion that that impersonal realization is like the
hellish condition? Oh, hellish condition. That's a devotional sentiment. Here's what's hellish for a devotee. Don't do any service. But you can be liberated. That's hellish. No. I want to serve. It's a devotional sentiment. I can't express my love. Just exist. That's hellish. Like this example of, you know, bound in a straitjacket in a padded cell with bound in. But you don't have any of the pains of material existence. Just like neutral state. It's hellish. It's hellish. For a devotee, it's hellish. But supposing somebody is suffering terribly, they may think that's a relief. I want relief. Let me out of here, man. I want relief. Will you take? Yes, I'll take that. I want really suffering. End that suffering. Looks good. For a devotee, it looks hellish. Because it's a devotional sentiment. Is that right? Okay. The suffering is over. But it's only first of all, it's only temporary. And the real happiness of the soul is awakened. I've given this example many times, but I'll do it again. My office in New York is right by a window. And there are people that park their cars on the street. And in New York, there's car theft, so people get car alarms. You heard car alarms when they go off? There's this cacophony of car alarms. And then there's three or four of them going on. And then people come out of their office and swipe a little switch and it stops. The happiness of Brahman realization. The raucousness of material existence, just like it's a chill. But what about positive spiritual existence? So besides calling it hellish, there's other metaphors. Metaphor of the happiness of the footprint of a calf compared to an ocean of happiness. The hellishness is no service. So for one who is, as you're describing, in a approaching the threshold of bhakti position, you know, ending this, if I can get this deal where all of that mental, physical, emotional, all that noise and nonsense, and I just pain, it's over, may look attractive. Therefore, our acharyas are helping us to understand that's not what real happiness is. It's a negation of material suffering. That's not what real happiness is. What is real happiness? I like Prabhupada's language here. The ultimate aim of religious performances is to release oneself from material bondage and
we gain the life of freedom in the transcendental world, where the personality of Godhead is the supreme person. Suffering feature of material existence, it has some appeal to it, for those, especially for those that are suffering. It's quite incomplete. If you don't like, if you have objection to the word, or have, you're feeling not so comfortable with the word hellish, it's incomplete. So, your message is, hey, I'll take incomplete over what I've got. Looks attractive. The problem with buying into that is it anesthetizes the tendency is to cover or diminish that very source of real happiness, positive happiness. Love. Loving service, expressing unto the Supreme, and then in turn unto the Supreme, unto others who are in relation to the Supreme. Loving relationships become anesthetized. That's not happiness. Cessation of suffering is not happiness. The other is real happiness. And when that other real happiness awakens, good news is that if the illusion of suffering also, same thing will happen. It will subside and it's gone. The material energy is still out there doing its thing. The waves are still moving, but the lotus flower is up above the waves and isn't getting wet, even in a storm. Because of being transcendentally situated in one's constitutional happiness,